everyone. Welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. We're almost halfway through Women in Horror Month. I can't believe it. What movies have you been watching? Have any of them been women-centric? Let me know on Twitter or Instagram. This week, I'm sharing the conversation that I had with the co-host of the YouTube channel, Voices from the Mausoleum, Angel. She is from Georgia, so we talked about some of the haunted Georgia spots that she's been to, how she's introducing her five-year-old sons very slowly to horror movies, and why she loves the found footage genre so much. We traded our recommendations on found footage gems, which you'll want to stay tuned for, the one time she encountered a ghost on a ghost tour, and much more. If you want to join the community over on our Patreon, click the link in the show notes, and for as low as $1 a month, you'll get access to early episode stickers, a monthly newsletter, and more. As always, please take a second to rate and review us wherever you listen, and let's get into my conversation with Angel. Hey, Angel, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, Allison. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for the invite. I'm excited to be here and to talk to you. Yeah. So my name is Angel. I run a horror YouTube channel called Voices from the Mausoleum. I've been a very, very, very long time lover of horror. My first memory of life is horror. And so, you know, about 3 years ago, I decided to finally do something with that. And I started a YouTube channel. So my channel itself, usually we really cover everything. I have a co-host named Steve and we work together to do, you know, filmmaker interviews, influential horror with different guests. We cover books, video games, remakes. I mean, literally anything under the horror umbrella you can find there. And through that, I've actually branched out into doing some writing things, some publishing things. And when I'm not doing horror things, I work in purchasing as my day job. And I am a single mom of a five-year-old that literally could do probably no wrong in my eyes. So very fulfilled life.
That's amazing. So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
It's such a hard question, right? Does everybody say that? I feel like everybody says that when they're horror fans, like, I have no idea. So if we're going influential route, the movie that really just set in stone, like the love I have for horror, it would be Poltergeist. If we're talking something I've probably seen a million times and can quote line for line, it would be a toss up between Scream and a found footage movie called The Monster Project. Those are movies that I'm constantly revisiting. I'm always talking about. They always find their way into conversation and they're the most enjoyable for me.
Awesome. I've never heard of The Monster Project, but I was just talking with another person about our favorite found footage horror movie. So I'll have to go look that up.
Yeah, it's a great one. It's in my top 10.
Nice. So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
So one of my first memories of life is actually seeing the movie Poltergeist, which I assume because I can still vividly remember it, I must have been at least 4, maybe 5, you know, and it kind of started this weird like thing I did with my family. Like my sister snuck to let me watch it. I remember them getting in trouble. Like I can hear the conversations in my head for letting me watch it so young. Cause by the time I was that age, it had been out for a few years. And then honestly, it got really cemented later because as I grew up, I had another sister that's all we did together was watch horror movies cause she was older than me. So when I would go stay at her house, that's all we did together. And I was always allowed to watch the stuff with her that, you know, my parents wouldn't let me watch or whatever. And then the other side of it is my dad and I have a really close relationship. And I grew up on like, you know, the old school Planet of the Apes. I grew up on like cheesy sci-fi, cheesy horror stuff. You know, he was the one that showed me all of the original Stephen King adaptations. We did miniseries month on Sci-Fi Channel and all of the Universal monsters. So I grew up watching, you know, like the original Frankenstein, Dracula, all of those. And it was just something we always did together. So it ended up becoming a love of a genre that I shared with people that I loved, which really just turned into this thing of like, it was just still something, even to this day, I specifically watch the horror genre with my sister and my dad whenever I get the chance.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it's a good happy memory. Minus, I'm sure seeing Poltergeist at such a young age probably explains a lot as an adult, but it probably traumatized me. But other than that, good stuff.
Do you believe in ghosts now?
I do, sort of. I believe in some theories around ghosts. I don't know that I believe that ghosts are, you know, can be demonic in nature or anything like that. But I think that there's definitely some residual energy that can stay behind sometimes for sure.
So why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
I think it boils down to being this really interesting concept of control. I think You know, in real life, we don't have a lot of control over scary things that happen to us. But when we watch, you know, scary movies or read scary books or whatever, it's a very interesting sense of control over fear and the bad that is happening. So it can be something that's really unsettling, discomforting, things that linger with you after you turn them off, but you're still in your home and you're still safe from it. And I think it's such a weird pull. It's like almost like an adrenaline, like people who just love like skydiving, or it's a controlled sense of fear. And I think it's just an easy go back to because it's a comfortable feeling of discomfort.
I love that. What scares you today in horror movies?
In movies specifically, the things that get me the most, I have a real life fear of the dark. And so anything that lingers in the dark for too long gives me immediate dread and anxiety. If it's something like, and then if it's in the dark and you see like something, but you can't quite make out what it is, that always gets me, like movement, but you can't tell what's moving. You know, a piece of like if you see like a hand of a monster or something, that always affects me. And then the other thing that always gets me that just makes me like gives me the heebie-jeebies is like when things crawl really fast, or bodies
Yeah.
are like bit in very like abnormal directions. That's so unsettling to me.
So like Samara in the ring.
Yeah, that works. That's a good one. Yeah, definitely. That's definitely effective.
Yeah. What are your favorite and least favorite subgenres in horror?
Yeah, so my favorite subgenre is found footage. I kind of was late to the game on the found footage. I saw Blair Witch after it had been out for a really long, like 10 years, I think, before I saw it for the first time, which I was pretty young when it came out. But once I went and saw, like, you know, Paranormal Activity in theaters, I saw Quarantine in theaters, I started seeing more of it. And then it just turned into this thing where I was like, I really love what people do with found footage movies. And especially like this being like a really good way to get people's foot in the door for like new writers, new directors, because found footage can be done at such a lower budget than the bigger projects. And while we have mainstream, like bigger, you know, bigger production companies behind found footage movies, I tend to prefer the ones that are done by indie filmmakers. But I absolutely love the genre. I have an entire series on my show where I cover like just found footage movies, and it's something that I'm always watching, always talking about. My least favorite, I know people hate this answer. I really am not a big fan of like comedy horror. I really prefer serious, dark, unsettling horror as opposed to lighthearted, humorous horror. I do think that because humor and horror are both very much related to, you know, timing. Timing is what makes horror work. Timing is what makes comedy work. So I do think they naturally go very well together, but it's such a hard line for me between like silly and like effective horror that just has some humor in it. So I tend to stay away from comedy horrors the most.
Yeah, I am in total agreement with you. So, do you
Yeah.
have any recommendations for like hidden found footage gems?
Yeah, so all of the ones I normally recommend are all of a sudden being discovered. I think when Deadstream came out on Shudder last year, I think it like really amped up people's interest in found footage. So the couple that I always recommend, I always say the Monster Project. I'm gonna like if I could be known for recommending any movie, it would probably be The Monster Project. That's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love it so much. I rented it years and years ago, and then I literally went on Amazon the same night and bought it digital, so I've
Oh,
just
wow.
had it. I plan on having a tattoo of one of the creatures on me at some point in my life. So The Monster Project's a huge one. The other one that people are slowly starting to find now is a 2018 found footage movie called Savage Land. Savage Land is like a mockumentary style film where, but it's such a unique story, and it's done in such a way that you really like halfway through you're Googling to make sure that it is in fact. And then I think the only other one that I typically recommend that is really going to be hit or miss for people is a found footage alien movie called The Gracefield Incident. It's one of very few found footage movies that has a semi-happy ending, and I think that throws people because found footage always ends in awful terror, bad things. But I really liked the storytelling, and I really liked some of the scenes, and I'm obsessed with alien stuff, so it was something that hit or just checked all the boxes for me, and I don't feel like anybody talks about it.
I've never even heard of it, so I'm gonna have to go Google it
Yeah,
after. That's
that's
cool.
a good
Thank
one.
you.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite horror directors?
So I am horrible about even knowing who writes or makes movies. If unless it's a film that I just know a lot about, I typically don't even know who made it. The exception being if I had to pick one based off one that was big influential into like my love for horror, I'd probably go with a really classic answer of like Wes Craven. And then when I saw the continuation, Candyman, the newer one, I was like obsessed with it. I thought it was so well done. And so I did actually look into that one. And I don't know if it's pronounced Naya or Nia DaCosta, but she also did the newer, I'm drawing a blank on the name of it. But anyway, but she did such a great job with Candyman that it kind of cemented her name in my brain. And now I know if I see her name associated with a project, I'm more excited about checking it out based on that. Otherwise, I'm not very good at paying attention to that. So I watch movies based on what they look like and what I think, if they're going to be appealing to me as a film. And then I always pay attention to the other stuff after.
Totally, totally okay. I do that a lot. So you're the creator of the YouTube channel Voices from the Mausoleum for around 3 years now, right?
Yeah, we
Yeah.
celebrate 3 years in February. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So you do reviews, readings, horror makeup looks, and unboxings. How did you come up with the idea for it?
This is a sad answer, but I guess it ended up being a good thing. So I don't have a lot of people in my immediate life that I can share horror with. You know, I do have a close relationship with my sister and dad that love horror, but they don't live in the same city as me. I don't get to go see stuff or talk about things as often as I'd like. And with life, like they don't get to stuff as quickly as I do as a content creator or even before. So I didn't have a lot of people to talk horror with. And it's such a big part of like interest for me. And it's an aesthetic, and it's like, it's a really big part of my life. And so I was, you know, I did YouTube for a little while with my best friend. We did something completely unrelated. And I really kind of liked the concept of like trying to be a part of a community online and, you know, it trying to get over the fear of what that means. And so I just decided, I was like, maybe I'll just do a podcast. At the very least, even if no one listens, I can get it out of my system. I can talk about it. It'll be something fun for me to do. And then I realized I just really liked the YouTube style of things and the video over the podcast. That was something that was more appealing to me. And so I did the YouTube route. And I, you know, when I was trying to think of a name and come up with like things that made sense for it, it was like, all I could, and this is literally like how this went. I literally was thinking, I was like, okay, like, what do I want to do for like a name? And the only things I knew for sure was I would have loved like a callback to like Tales from the Crypt or something like that. But I didn't want to do anything too overly obvious about that connection. And then all I can picture in my head was this girl in a mausoleum with papers all over a desk, you know, a microphone, a radio to her side. And she's just like sending out this signal, like just asking for people to come talk to her about horror. And there's this lime green light that comes up from it. And like, these are all just visuals in my head, things that I was thinking. And so it was like Voices from the Mausoleum. Like it literally just clicked like that. And it became something that I started out doing by myself. I was very scared of the concept of like putting myself out there, getting interacting with other people, but I really didn't get the full satisfaction of the content creating lifestyle, I guess, until I started really branching out and doing stuff with other people. And it really was me sending out the signal of like, talk to me about horror. I don't care what type of horror, just I just want to talk about it. And it grew from there into what it is now.
Oh, that's awesome. Who are your favorite horror creatives that you've interviewed?
So some of the ones I've had that I really love, one of them is probably more really recent. So Jamie Nash is a writer director. He's worked a lot with Ed Sanchez from the Blair Witch Project. And he co-wrote some stuff with Ed Sanchez but he's done some stuff on his own too. And we had interviewed him recently because he had a film come out this past week or in January. That was, what is it? Last Night in Terrace Lanes. It's like a slasher that takes place in a bowling alley. And so we were kind of like, he wanted to connect about it. We wanted to connect about it. So we talked about the film, but it ended up being such a great conversation because we actually, for the hour long and some change video that it is, we only really talked about Terrace Lanes for probably the first like 20 minutes. And then we talked about what it was like doing found footage movies, what it was like. And so he helped write one of my favorite Bigfoot found footages, which is the movie Exist. I love that one. It's, to me, it's far superior than Willow Creek. I absolutely love it. And so I was like, I told my co-host Steve, I was like, I have to keep it in check. I'm like, I know there's all these things I want to talk about. We're supposed to talk about this movie. So anyway, but he was so great, like so warm, so excited to talk about anything we wanted to talk about. Didn't matter. So of course we ended up talking about Exist. We ended up talking about found footage and we started talking about werewolves. And it's just this really great conversation. So that's got to be like top three for me because I had already admired stuff that he did. But then he was like also such just a great person to talk to. And then on the more like content side, I do like regular stuff with a horror YouTube channel called Horror Fiend TV. And I met them kind of on accident. They had posted about doing a movie that I had just seen and I commented that I loved it. We connected. I ended up doing a review with them. And now they're like buddy, like their buddies. Like it's a YouTube channel ran like a television network. So they literally have like series of different shows and they host them like television shows, and they have seasons, and it's just very like a really intricate thing that just turned out to be great. And it's a lot of fun to watch. But the guys on there are super great and they have such varied interests that the conversation's always super, super fun and different and varied opinions across the board, which is always makes the conversations more exciting. And then the other one that I met probably more recently is Sledgehammer Horror. So they do a ton of different horror content as well. But one of the things that really stuck out to me about them was, a lot of people say they're about community, but very few like prove that in the things that they do. And they were just like alarmingly open and welcome. They're a pretty big channel, especially compared to like my channel. And so to see that bigger channels are still super happy to work with smaller content creators and love and promote their stuff as well. They're very warm and opening for their allies for the queer community. There's literally anybody from any background, any ethnicity, any gender, any sexual, like you're gonna find them in a comfortable place with Sledgehammer Horror. And that really spoke to me. So I always love working with them too.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, Exists is a really good movie, but I also really like Willow Creek.
Willow Creek. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big, a lot of people really like Willow Creek. I just really liked Exist more for, that was more for me. I
Yeah.
like more action, I think, is part of the reason. A little more
Yeah.
busy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome that you've interviewed cool people like that. I love when that happens. And I'll have to check out Last Night at Terrace Lanes because I have not seen that yet.
Yeah, I actually haven't watched it yet either because it was only available on Apple for like the first few days, but I think it just recently, now I think you can watch it somewhere else. I need to catch up on it too. I'm sure I'm gonna love it. It's a really slasher in a bowling alley. It just sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't there part of there was part of another of a zombie horror movie, that musical zombie horror movie from England.
Yeah,
I don't
Anna and the Apocalypse.
Yeah, I think doesn't part of that take place in like a bowling alley or an
It
arcade?
does.
Yeah.
It does. And I thought of that when I saw the trailer for Terrace Lanes. I was like, only a bowling alley though. I was like, oh, I'm in. Cause like
Yeah.
the bowling alley scenes in Anna and the Apocalypse are super fun. And it's such a unique, place to do anything horror related. So yeah, I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah. What tips do you have for anyone who might want to start a horror YouTube channel nowadays?
Do whatever you want. I think I got told so many times what I should and shouldn't do. And one of the things is like I don't have like one. There's so many channels that do just horror movie reviews and they're very successful and they're really cool people. But I knew that there was more to just what I want to talk about than films. And I got told that like I needed to pick a lane. And I was like, no, I'm not going to. And I think one of my favorite things is when other people talk about my channel and listening to them talk in a positive way about the fact that we do so much. It's like, yeah, that's what I wanted to do. So if you're thinking about starting, a podcast or a YouTube channel, do what you want because you're the one that has to create it. And if you water it down and you do what you think other people are going to want or what other people are telling you, and it's not true to what you want or what your vision is, you're going to burn out. I don't think it's going to work long term. You have to do what is meaningful and fun for you. And the only other thing and I have to tell myself this all the time because our channel is still growing. Even at 3 years, it's still a very new channel. I have to remember not to pay attention to analytics yet. Like it's one thing if you're trying to figure out like, okay, do videos do better if they go out at, 2 o'clock or 7 o'clock or whatever. But when I first started Voices, it was constantly checking views, constantly checking likes, constantly. Try really, it's so hard. Try not to pay attention to that stuff. I think that the way that you know that you're successful when you're small is you have people that are excited about what you do. And that can only sometimes that's only two people. I don't think it has to be thousands of people liking you to make what you're doing special or fun. I think it takes just letting it happen, working on it, building connections, and then you'll see the growth naturally when you do it that way. And it's much better to have people just talking about it, even if it's only a few people. So that's what I would say. Do what you want and try really, really hard not to pay attention to view counts or listen counts or download counts.
That's great advice. Yeah, I was talking to someone lately and I was like, so my audience is only this many people. And she was like, well, that's that many people that like listen continuously. That's great. So, yeah.
Yeah, I have people that I mean, I remember like this is not, I'm not exaggerating. I just launched merch not that, or we just launched merch not that long ago. And I remember the first time somebody bought a t-shirt, I almost cried. I was like, oh my God. Like, it really, I'm trying to find the joy in like the little moments like that. It's like maybe one day everyone in the world will have like a Voices t-shirt, right? But for now, that one person stopped what they were doing to go check it out, to buy it, and then thought to share it. And you got to find the moments like that and appreciate them for what they are and value those people.
Yeah, I started a Patreon about a month ago, so I'm like trying
Oh,
to
good
like
luck.
talk it up. So anytime I get a an email that like somebody joined, I'm like, oh, thank you.
That's funny. We actually just launched ours yesterday, and
Oh, nice.
it's only, it wasn't, we're not, we're doing okay. But the success of it to me was just anyone signing up, and it's just meaningful. I totally get what you mean.
So I see that you have a Silent Hill poster behind you. Are you looking forward to the sequel that's coming out this year?
Yeah, that's my most anticipated for 2024. So
Nice.
actually, fun fact, that's makeup. It's who is it?
Oh,
Vampire
okay.
Cosmetics. Yeah, Vampire Cosmetics did a collaboration with Konami, and it's really cool. It has like a pyramid head palette, a nurse palette, and then there's like three lips that you can get only in that. And so yeah, it's so stunning. Like the art on it is, I just can't even. And then like there's quotes from the game, and I'm a huge like video gamer too. And so like it's so great. So yeah, so the Return to Silent Hill, I'm so pumped about. So video game adaptation wise, Silent Hill is like my number two. I absolutely loved the original from 2006. I saw it twice in theaters in the same day. Like love it, love it, love it.
Wow.
And actually, since it's been on Netflix, I think I've rewatched it probably a dozen times. And so I'm so pumped, and I'm so glad it's the same team that did 2006, because when they did the 3D movie after, I just didn't like that one. The one they did with Heather, I thought it just wasn't, it wasn't as good as the one from 2006. So I'm excited to see the same people coming back to it, because they have a lot of passion for it, and they're really interested in conserving like the feeling of the game, but also bringing something new to the table. So that's my most anticipated for 2024. I'm so excited.
Oh, that's cool. I've only seen the first one. I've never seen Revelation. What do you think of that one?
It's okay. I mean, I think it was cool seeing some of the other characters going full back to like the cult. Did you play any of the games?
I did not know.
Okay. So it dives into more lore than the first one does, technically. But the biggest issue I had with it, in all honesty, was the fact that it was made for 3D. So the problem with making a film for 3D is then when you don't watch it in 3D, it looks crappy. And with the original, it was obviously a lot of CGI, but there was also a lot of practical stuff mixed in. And so the look of the 2006 was much better. And so it's hard watching Revelation as a non-3D movie. And it just kind of got, I think they also tried to pack in a little too much lore, maybe, because Silent Hill's a lot. That's why you have to learn the story by listening to pieces of it as you play it and stuff. It can be convoluted very quickly. So I didn't, Revelation's fine. Just wasn't as good as 2006, so I'm excited to see them go back to that and making something else for Silent Hill 2, or Return to Silent Hill.
Oh, that's awesome. Last April, I went with my boyfriend to Pittsburgh, and on our way back, we had some time, so we stopped in Centralia, where Silent Hill was based on. So that was, and it was like rainy and misty out. So it was pretty creepy. And there was like people who spray painted on the side, like the remaining sidewalks, like keep out or like leave or something.
Oh, did you take pictures? That sounds awesome.
I'll send you my post from my Instagram after.
Yeah,
There were,
that sounds amazing. That's a bucket list thing for me, is to go there.
yeah, it was very creepy because it's like, it's really hard to find. You have to like Google how to like find the streets that are left.
Yeah, that adds to it though, right? Like then it's like, oh, yeah.
It's like in between these two smaller towns, and there's like nothing on the map in between it. But you mentioned that you have a 5-year-old at the beginning. How do you plan to introduce them to horror if you do?
Yeah, so he's already introduced to horror. I actually forgot how bad Jaws was and showed him Jaws when he was like 2 or 3. It was an accident, sort of. I just didn't remember all the blood and the screaming. And because, Jaws is rated PG because it came out before the PG-13 rating. And so I really didn't think about it. And that started this very weird love of shark movies. So, like, basically, the biggest thing for me with introducing him and showing him stuff is we just have a lot of conversations about feelings. It's like, is this too much? Is this overwhelming? Is this making you uncomfortable? Do we need to revisit, and just trying to make sure that he understands that like he does not have to put himself in a compromising situation just to watch something scary. And so he watches a lot of shark movies. His one of the ones that we've rewatched, I think the most, is probably 47 Meters Down, Uncaged.
Okay.
And it's crazy because I'm always checking in because I'm worried that I'm gonna like ruin him. And I'm like, so we watched one of the scenes in 47 Meters when they're in that, like, they come up out of the water finally, and they're in that like circle, whatever that's called. And the sharks, there's two sharks in there, and they just start, they eat the dad character, I think. And so it's very brutal. It's a very brutal scene, and it's very clear because they're in a lot clearer water than they are in the other parts of the film. And I'm like, are you okay? Like, you know, are you feeling? And he's like, of course I'm okay. I love the sharks. And then the sharks goes away and he's like, well, where are they? Like, he's not care about the people being murdered or killed or eaten by sharks. He's like, just wants to see them do it more. And so he watches, he loves Gremlins. Gremlins is a pretty safe one in general. It's nowhere near as scary as the shark films. He loves Gremlins, especially Gremlins 2, because they turn into weird things like the spider and the bat and all that. He loves that. And then the other thing that he's like super obsessed with is Five Nights at Freddy's. So I watched it first because it came out on Peacock as well as theaters. And I watched it first and I was like, literally nothing happens. It'll probably be fine if he watches it. And so I showed it to him and he was super enamored with it. He loves it. And now he's like into the game, like interested. He can't play him because he's only five, but he's interested in the games. And he's just like, so, and he kind of feels like he has like a brag right to talk about the fact that he like loves spooky stuff. But we always talk about like, yeah, but everybody's got different limitations and it's okay, you know, but yeah, he's already introduced. So it's the biggest thing for me is I watch things first. Super, you know, obviously stuff with like nudity, a lot of language, a lot of violence and gore is not on the table right now. He's too young. But anything monstery like is usually a little bit safer. So yeah, it's just gauging his interest and seeing what's uncomfortable and not uncomfortable. So yeah.
That's awesome. I don't remember where are you located? Where do you live?
I live in Georgia, not too
Oh.
far from Atlanta.
Okay, cool. Have you ever been to any like haunted, like supposedly haunted places or areas in Georgia?
No, it's on my list. I was probably too scared to do it before I was in my 30s, and by the time I reached my 30s, I already had a child, and so it's hard to plan around those things. There is this building though. I don't even know if it's haunted. It just looks like it would be haunted. There's this closed off building where like the concrete and the parking lot is like cracked, and there's like grass coming up, and it's like always looks gray around it. I don't know. I'm probably making that part up, but it's like it's very spooky looking. And I keep telling myself, I'm like, one of these weekends that I don't have my kid, I'm gonna look up how to get access to that building if they'll let me go into it and just do that. Because I would love to go look into places that are haunted, or I honestly, anything like urbex kind of like, I would love to do stuff like that. I did the Atlanta ghost tour like years
Oh,
ago.
cool.
And I kind of expected it to be a little cheesy. I mean, it's mostly historical lessons, but we actually had a couple of experiences on that kind of turned my opinion on ghost tours because they seem very hokey in concept, but I think it's all based. I mean, I think if you're going to have an experience with anything that's weird, it's individual based. It's not going to be usually as like a group. But we had a couple of things happen on that have kind of made me revisit what I do believe in and that kind of thing. And it's made me be interested in going to do more things like that, but not as like a clicky, like, or I mean, like a cliche, like group of people looking at ghosts and taking pictures and stuff like that. But yeah, and then I did go to do a ghost hunt, my first official one ever, last year, the year before, and it was a house that it had some instances in, and so we went and did, you know, like the whole thing. We did the recorders, we had cameras set up. I went with a ghost hunting group in my city. And it was really fun at the very least to just see the setup and kind of go through the motions of an investigation. And there's a couple of like things that could probably be explained away, but we did get this really cool one of a door opening. And then we spent like the next hour and a half trying to debunk it, and we couldn't get the door to open again. Like, we jumped on it, we pushed on it, like it was like a whole thing. And it was really fun being a part of something like that. So I would love to do that more, maybe, hopefully.
Oh, that's amazing. I would be too scared to go do ghost hunting like that, but I love doing ghost walking tours when I go visit
Yeah.
different cities. I
Yeah.
did one in Asheville when I was there in 2022, and
Yeah.
there's one house, I forget what it's called, but it's like supposedly very haunted, a lot of energy. And our tour guide told us once that like a woman was looking at the house, and like she then apparently started like having chest pains, and they had to take her to the hospital, and she said it felt like somebody was squeezing her heart. And right before that, she had seen something in the window of the house that told her not to take a photo. And then she took a photo anyway. And then so it like reached out and grabbed her heart and squeezed it. I don't know how
My
true it is.
goosebumps. That's wild. When we did the Atlanta one, I don't, and I'm gonna be honest with you, I wasn't interested in the history lesson. I mean, I like history, I think it's cool, but like I just wasn't listening. And I'm just looking at, so everybody from our group had already moved on. I was looking at this little house, and my friend had a camera with him, and he took it and he put it in the, 'cause you can't go into any of these locations, you just have to walk by them. Well, you know that, you've done the walking tours. And so you take the camera, he took the camera and he like put it in the window of the inside of the door, and he took the picture. And he like walked off, and I was like just looking around thinking. I had on jeans, and I felt this like weird sensation of like my pocket being tugged, not aggressively, but just enough that it was weird. And there was like no one around me. I immediately got freaked out. I was like, oh, don't like that. And I went and walked. So fast forward to later that night, my best friend's going through his photos, and he's like, oh my God, look at this picture. And on his camera, that house that I was standing in front of that I felt the little tug, there's like the outline of like a child in the window of the photograph that he took. And it very much is like a child thing to like come up and like tug on. Anyway, it just was like, it was one of those things where it was just like, ugh. Like it was scary, but it was like also really sweet and kind of sad. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, those experiences are crazy. I'm open to experiencing some things, but I do have like this light in my head that goes off sometimes. That's like, you don't want to bring anything back. You have a kid to think of, like, so that kind of stuff makes me a little cautious to do more stuff like that. But yeah, those experiences are wild.
Yeah, I plan to visit Savannah, Georgia this
Oh
year
yeah.
because I want to do a ghost tour there and go to all the creepy things that they have.
St. Augustine is the other one. St. Augustine's like the most haunted city in like the country or something crazy like
In
that.
Florida?
Isn't it? Yeah.
I went to St. Augustine when I was like 7, but of course
Yeah.
I wasn't doing ghost tours when I was 7.
Yeah, it's supposed I've never been. It's supposed to be wild though. Like they have like people have experiences and their ghost tour like all the time.
Ooh, okay. Well, maybe I'll have to go there.
Yeah.
Are there any horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't watch ever again?
Yeah, Cannibal Holocaust, and the other one is It Comes at Night. It's A24 movie. It or They Come
Yeah,
at It
it
Comes at
comes
Night.
at night. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't ever watch that one again. I don't typically like A24 films anyway. I just keep giving them chances. And that one looks spooky. And I watched it. And the reason I will never revisit one, I actually didn't think it was a very, it just, it wasn't one that appealed to me. But have you seen this one?
I haven't, but I heard, okay, spoilers maybe for this movie if anyone hasn't
Yes.
watched it yet, but I heard that nothing ever comes.
Right. It's a psychological, it's all a head thing. It's all about paranoia in dystopian environments and like how
Okay.
people are going to react. The problem is I used to could watch anything, and then I had a baby, and that changed, well, everything. Like I can't watch Pet Sematary probably. Well, I could probably watch the original again, but like I turned on the remake and I couldn't do it. When I
Yeah.
saw the first truck, I immediately was like, oh no, I forgot. That's how this starts. Nope. And I cut it off. I'm way more sensitive to that stuff. And there's something involving a child that's really brutal and awful. And it just, compared to how much of a snooze fest the rest of the film was, it was out of place, but it upset me in such a way that like I had to like go into my son's room while he was sleeping and like lay on the floor next to it. Like it was so traumatizing. It was horrible. And I'm like, I will never revisit that film. And Cannibal Holocaust is probably pretty obvious why I won't revisit that, because that's all real animals. I just can't, like I can't do it. So, but those are my two no's, never again.
Yeah, those are understandable. Did you see When Horror Lurks last year when it came out?
I did. You're talking about the dog scene?
Yeah.
So you know what's crazy? I think the only reason, I'm gonna be honest, first of all, I thought that was a great movie. I think the only reason I was able to get through that is because I genuinely didn't think it was gonna go there. Because before it gets to that scene, there's a lot of other stuff going on. I'm like into it. I'm like, okay, so this is like an interesting take. I'm like thinking, I'm dissecting, I'm breaking it down in my head. And then it like keeps focusing, and I was like, oh no. But by the time it happens, it's so fast.
Yeah.
It's already happened. And then, she, the scene that comes after that, and she's totally fine. It's like, okay, that helped. Like that helped. Because then you're like, okay, never happened, right? But yeah, that was, God, that's brutal. But that's the people who did
Terrified.
Terrified.
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, Terrified is so good, but it also has kid stuff, not as brutal as that. But they're not afraid to push those boundaries in a lot of ways, not just with children. So those filmmakers are great. Like I really look forward to seeing more stuff from them. Yeah, that scene was rough. It just happened so fast that you almost don't even have time to like process it. And then it escalates to the point that it does, and then afterwards you're like, oh, it's fine. It's weird. It in my head, it was like I could deal with it because of that. I think if it had shown anything more, or she hadn't ended up, how it was, then it would have been very different. But I didn't know that was going to happen, so it caught me completely off guard.
Yeah, it was a great moment.
Yeah, it was very good.
Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters?
I did, but probably not for the reason that most people say. So I went and saw The Grudge in theaters. I think I was in high school when it came out. That sounds right. And so, first of all, I'm a massive, and when I say massive, I do not mean it lately. I'm like a massive Buffy fan. And so, Sarah Michelle Gellar in anything, I'm there. And so, The Grudge, I wanted to see The Grudge. I went and saw it in theaters. And, that was at the time before you could do reserve seats. So, like, I'm like in the front, like, my head is like craned upwards, I'm like, trying to see it. But I didn't care. I was like, I'm here for this. It was so good. I loved it. There was this guy sitting like maybe a row, maybe two rows behind me. And when I said this guy was huge, he had to have been like 6 foot 4, like 300. This guy was massive. He stands up towards the end of the film. This movie's been out for a very long time, so this shouldn't really be that big of a spoiler. But towards the end, when she's going to save her boyfriend and she's running around that corner and she's running down the road, this guy, two rows behind me, jumps out of his seat and loud as hell goes, "Run, Buffy, run!" Like at the top of his lungs. And I just lost it. It was like such a tension breaker for the moment, but it was so funny because I'm like, I get him because I'm thinking the exact same thing in my. She will never be anyone to me other than Buffy, right? And so, but it just made for such a fun, like, camaraderie type silent moment shared between Buffy fans and in a horror film that's not related to Buffy at all. It just has Sarah Michelle Gellar in it. And it's one of those moments that I've never forgotten as a theater experience, because a lot of theater experiences for me end up being annoying because there's people taking pictures, there's people talking, and I definitely sound like I'm not 20 anymore. But like that kind of stuff irritates me because it's expensive to go to the theater. So I don't have a lot of super positives other than enjoying movies. And that was so great. I'll never forget that man, like as long as I live, with his run, Buffy Run. Yeah. And then maybe an honorary mention is when they did $3 movie deals a lot last year, but the year before, my best friend took me on my birthday to see Jaws and IMAX.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And I had never seen Jaws on the big screen. Never. I'd never seen it on the big screen. And so it was huge. That was a great experience. But yeah, the Run Buffy Run guy, I think about that moment 10 times a day. It was great.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so much fun.
Yeah.
So we already know your most anticipated movie of 2024 is, but what was your favorite horror movie of 2023?
Oh, this is also probably going to be a very disappointing answer for a lot of people. So I was not as bemused with 2023 as I was with 2022. 2022 was like this great year in horror where there was like so much good. It was hard to make a list. Like I did an end of the year list in 22, and it was difficult to narrow it down. It was hard. I couldn't even come up with a top 10 list for 2023 this year. And again, it's all personal interest. It's things that, I'm not as interested in a lot of the things that everybody's got different things. But so if I had to pick one, and this is solely based on something that just as far as the overall experience of seeing the film was just the most enjoyable for me for the year, would be Saw X or Saw 10. Saw is one of the earliest films I saw, like that just really. Like I watched the original Saw with my dad, and it's one of my influential horrors. It's something that I just always speaks to me. I've nothing but love and respect for the franchise, huge Saw fan. And so, when I went to see this, I like made like hacksaw earrings and I wore like the Billy's, the whole nine. And I went and saw it, and I was so in love with what they did with it. And it just ended up being more than I probably could have asked for, given the way that this was done, right? Because it's a prequel. And so it going back in time and it being, however many years after the fact of when we see him, he dies pretty early in the franchise. And so it was just a very almost like a weird emotional experience getting to see this character. Because John is a bad guy, right? Like he's a villain, but he's not, but we love him. Like he's also like, we're also like, poor John. Like he puts these people in these horrible situations, and we're like, yeah, but we get it, poor John, And so getting to see this dynamic of him kind of coming into his days and the sense of humanity that they give to him, which is very tricky business when you're talking about bad people, and getting to see like Amanda's, because when we see Amanda in the original franchise, she goes from one extreme to the other. We don't get to see any of her development as, as his like protege. And so that was really cool. And there's just a lot of emotional moments in this. And I really, really loved it. And it was my favorite new horror experience for 2023.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I did not have high expectations because all of the sequels were so not great. But I saw the original in theaters when I was 18. So, and it scarred me and I wouldn't go back to it for 15 years. I loved it.
What was your reaction when he gets up off the floor in the first one? Were you just like, oh my
I
God?
have no idea. I don't even remember because it was too long ago. But I remember I rewatched Saw for the first time in 2021 with my friend right before we went to go see Spiral.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I thought he had seen it before. He thought he had seen it before. So when it starts and there's the dude on the floor, spoilers for anyone that hasn't seen Saw, but also, what are you doing?
It's super old, yeah.
Yeah. And I like said to my friend, I was like, oh yeah, just the alive dead guy on the floor. And then at the end of it, I guess he wasn't listening to me because he my friend is like, yeah, you know, I don't think I ever actually have seen this. And I was like, good thing you weren't listening to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's huge. I actually do. I watched it from home because I was too young to see it in theaters. Well, it would have depended. My sister didn't prioritize taking me to see it, so I didn't go see it in theaters. But I watched it at home with my dad, and my dad got up at one point. He's like super ADD with movies. Like he skips, he fast forward, drives me nuts. But so we've been watching the whole movie. He just gets up like right at the end of the movie and goes and does something. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like this is the end of like the music's amp. Like things are happening. What's happening? And I remember sitting on the couch, and he gets up. And I literally melted off the couch. I slid from the couch to the ground, and I just gawked in disbelief of like, there is no fucking way that this is reality right now. There's no way. And this movie was so low budget, he literally had to lay there for so much of this film. And I don't know. I've never forgotten the way that that made me feel. And I felt got just like everybody else, like the guy that, like the reveal to the characters, like the other people that have ever seen, I felt got like, and it just is always like stuck with me. Like I've never forgotten that feeling. And they do get convoluted. The last several were not super great, but honestly, the original three I think are super solid in the franchise as far as keeping the tone, keeping the everything kind of similar, and the things that we loved about the original. I think two and three are pretty good. But yeah, that was I that experience seeing in theaters was great for me. For
Yeah,
them.
I like the story that goes through all of them. I binged all of the sequels before Saw X came
I
out
did the same thing, yeah.
because I had never seen any of them. And I was like, oh, the violence is going to be too much. My friend was like, the script might be pretty bad too. And the script was more offensive than the fake violence because the acting, not great. I enjoyed it, got really confusing. I was like, white detective number one, white detective number two. There's
Sure.
no difference
Right.
between any of them. And my favorite sequel is probably the one with the insurance guys that get
Yeah, that's a
what's
good one.
coming to them.
Yeah, that's
So,
a good one.
yeah, I like those. They're
Yeah.
great.
Those, and it's so strange. And you always see these memes that are like, it says like, bitches be like, this is my comfort movie. And then it's like Saw. I'm like, that's so true though. Like I will rewatch those for no reason other than I just want to. Like I own the first four back when they did those really like those cool like clear cases where it had like the piece, I don't know, like they looked really funky and they were neat. So I owned several of those, but I stopped buying them after I saw four because I genuinely was like, oh, it's not gonna get any better after this. Like you just know, but yeah, no, I thought I was impressed with what they were able to do with X because of how long it had been. And I wish I could have been more level-headed like you. I should have. It would have been safer to go in with like very like not high expectations. I just couldn't help it. I was just so excited to see it, and I hadn't had a chance to wear my Billy shirt in theaters yet because it's I was not going to pay to see Spiral, and I waited until everything else was streaming. So it was such a great experience though. My best friend and I like we're like in tears at certain points. But I look over each other like. And then we get to the ending of Saw X where we finally get like the one character like I'd been waiting to see, and I was like, everyone else got up from the theater and left. We're the only ones left, and I was like, oh, they missed like one of the funnest parts of this. That was so fun because I was wondering, I was like, what happened to the guy that lied to him in the beginning? And then I was like, oh, here we go, full circle. This is good.
Yeah, seeing that in the packed theater was great. And there was
Yeah.
somebody there who brought a Billy doll
Oh my
and like
God.
had him like standing on the ledge the entire time. I was like, that's cute. Saw the musical parody is going to be touring around the country this year. So check it out. Maybe it will be hitting Atlanta probably.
Yeah, Atlanta tends to get a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of fun. I'll have to look
It's
into that.
so ridiculous. It's not serious at all.
No, of course. I still keep meaning to see the Scream one because I'm a big Scream fan too. And I didn't even know that was the thing until recently that there was like a Scream musical too. And I'm like, what? And they sing like there's like an Alanis Morissette song in it. I'm like, oh man, I gotta see that. So that sounds cool. I have to look up the Saw one and see if it's coming to my city.
Yeah. Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
Yeah, I think It's usually the other way around. It's usually I hate everything that people love. I think so. The more recent ones that come to mind is, and these are probably super fresh because I just did these. I just talked about these on Creepy and Geeky podcast. But it's like there are these two films that are child like imagination kind of driven films. But one is called Z. Sometimes it's called Z Wants to Play, but I think primarily it's just Z. And then the second one is a Come Play. They're very much in the same vein. One is about an imaginary friend. One is about a demon that comes through portals and takes lonely children. But they're very, I think that those types of films are very niche. Like they appeal to very specific audiences. And so whenever I want to talk about those two films, people are like, ugh. They're like, I didn't like that. And I'm like, oh, I love them so much. Like I thought they were so great. And I've got all these opinions. And those are the two more recent ones that come to mind. Because typically I'm usually the one that's like, oh, that wasn't, I didn't like that at all. And it's usually people like, so like for me, I always get I like a lot of people that like interact with me on Twitter and stuff tease me about the fact that I hate the movie Creep, which is a found footage movie that everybody hard eyes. And it's great. I'm so glad people love it. I have no problem discussing films that I don't like respectfully. It just wasn't for me. It just wasn't one that I liked. And so there's people who will specifically, no matter what I'm posting, post Creep GIFs under what I'm posting just to torment me because they know I'm not a big fan. And then the other one that was like that was a lot of A24 stuff I don't really like. I like Saint Maud and I like Talk to Me. That was about it. So I get a lot of Hereditary GIFs as well because Hereditary was one that I was like, I do not understand. Yeah, I think I'm a little easier to please in the in a lot of sense. I think sometimes when we have been doing, especially when we're content creators of any kind, where we're covering like talking about horror movies on a regular basis, or even if we just watch them all the time, eventually, like at least for me, I feel I get burned out with them. And then it's easier for me to be like, oh, that was awful because I'm tired of watching it. And I really just need to take a break and watch something else for a little while that's not in the genre and then come back. And then it's like starting with fresh eyes. But I went through a funk with that with found footage because I cover it every week. So watching found footage movie after found footage, there's so many that aren't good. And it's really hard to find the ones that are amazing, let alone good enough to watch, you know? And you get burnt out on it. So I tend to like, I'm always on the other side of it of like, oh, I didn't like that, but everyone else loved it. I usually can tell if I'm gonna like something based on someone else hating it. But yeah, Z Wants to Play and Come Play are the two that come to mind the most. I think most of my other interests are pretty big franchise stuff. And then, or it's so indie, nobody's heard of it. Like the Monster Project. Like no one knows what that is. And so the few people I've got to watch it have really loved it, but I tend to be the one not liking stuff as opposed to liking stuff that other people don't like.
Have you seen Butterfly Kisses?
I have seen
Yeah,
Butterfly
I like that
Kisses.
movie.
I love it. It's very Slender Man, which I
Yeah.
love Slender Man. And we actually on Found Footage Fridays, we actually interviewed the concept artist for Butterfly Kisses.
Oh, cool.
I don't have frames for them yet, but because they're going to go somewhere back there, but he actually sent us signed concept pictures and
Oh,
stuff
that's so
of coming
cool.
up with the design for Peeping Tom, and it's a really cool conversation. And they had a lot of hiccups filming that film in general, but it was really cool talking. Yeah, that's a great one. Super underrated too. I don't think enough people talk about that one either.
I did see Come Play when it first came out, and my friend and I were like, we like this, but it's kind of weird how super on board the parents got when this kid first told them what was going on. We're like, usually it takes a little bit more convincing, but these parents were
Yes.
like, yep, let's go.
Yeah. I actually like one of my biggest like complaints about tropes in horror is this concept that we don't believe women or children. It's like if you have been married to somebody, looking at you, Josh, and Insidious, and you have had children with them, and they tell you that something crazy is happening, and you just assume they're nuts, divorce. I'm out. Like I tell my friends all the time, I'm like, if I tell you some weird shit is going on with me and you don't believe me, you think I'm crazy, I'm finding new friends. Like, you know me well enough to know I'm level-headed. I have no reason to make this up. Kids, a little bit harder because, you know, kids have really great imaginations, but I think I'm such a spooky person naturally that if my son told me something weird happened, I'd just believe him. But yeah, I know you're right because it usually takes what, 2/3 of the movie before the parents go, oh, okay, we put you through all of that and you weren't lying. Got it. You know, like,
Yeah, I showed my boyfriend Orphan and Orphan First Kill last night, and both
yeah.
of the husbands are just like, no, everything's fine. It's great.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's great. I haven't watched Z yet, but I've interviewed Brandon Christensen before, so
Oh, very cool.
I have
Yeah.
to watch that at some point. And creepy kids are great, aka
Creepy
the
kids are
worst.
great. Yeah, that one goes. That's also got, and I cannot think of her name. She's in it so much though. The woman that plays the mother in Z, she was the medium in White Noise.
Okay.
She was also in a show called The Magician. She's always in stuff like she was like the blue fairy in Once Upon a Time. She's in like all kinds of stuff. But I love her in general. Like I think she's so captivating and she just is so engaging when she's on camera. Z went into some directions I did not expect it to go to. And I do think story-wise, I would say it's a little bit superior to Come Play, but I do think ultimately I liked Come Play a little bit more just because the creature design was so funky. But yeah, you should watch it. It's good. I really liked it a lot. It's on Shudder. Z is. Yeah, but either way, it's worth a watch. I really like that one.
Awesome. If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
This game me canceled. First of all, I'm a very big advocate for remakes and continuations. I just believe in them. I think they need to be done. I enjoy them. I would really love to see an all practical effects redo of Jaws because I feel like Jaws is a terrifying movie. It is so scary. It's psychological horror. It's monster horror. I know a lot. There's like that debate that comes around every June 1st where it's like Jaws isn't a horror movie. It is. It's definitely a horror movie. I think anything like that where a shark, it's terrifying. So that counts as horror. So I would like to see an all practicals remake of Jaws, mostly because it's such an influential film. It influenced the world. It caused a lot of problems for the shark community, but it created a lot of things in the real world as well as in the horror, genre. And there are so many silly, over-the-top, heavily CGI shark movies. I don't think people remember how scary sharks can be, and I would really like to remind them of that. So it would be really cool to do an, like I said, all it has to be all practical. If there's any CGI or anything, just please don't even touch, just leave it alone. But if it's going to be something where it's going to be invested like it was originally, I would love to see that. I think it could be done with the right people. I think it could be really, really, really good. And I think it could really remind people that, like, hey, sharks might be silly in tornadoes, but they're also very scary in the ocean. And so I just think it would be fun to kind of revisit this concept that sharks are scary. They're not just silly and funny, you know?
I love it.
Yeah.
If you could see one horror movie on a big screen with an audience, which one would it be?
It would be a toss-up between Poltergeist and the original Saw, because I didn't get to see that in theaters. I have not seen either on the big screen. In general, I would absolutely jump on a chance to see them on a big screen. They're both, yeah. Either one of those, I think, would be really cool to see on the big screen.
Awesome. So this is coming out in March for Women in Horror Month. So let's end with this question. Who is your favorite final girl?
My favorite final girl. I'm just going to pick one. I've got two. Let me think. Which one? I'm going to go with Erin from Your Next.
Oh, yeah, she's mine.
Yeah, I have like the biggest, I love her so much. I think it's because I really just loved in general. And she wasn't the only one that started this, and I realized that. But I really like this new generation of capable final girls where they don't just survive on accident, right? They're not all virgins. There's no weird like sexual implications to their ability to survive. It's empowering. Like it's empowering to see women that are like just normal women. Older women, women who are just like she's like, no, I grew up like this. I got it under control. Like she's one of my favorites. I was late to the game on Your Next, but when I watched it, immediately fell in love with it. It's such a great film. She's phenomenal. I liked her. She's also in a shark. Speaking of sharks, she was also in Bait randomly, but I didn't like her as much as that. She's perfect for Erin though. I love her. So yeah, Erin's my number one final girl. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you and Voices from the Mausoleum?
Yeah, well, thanks again for having me. This was a lot of fun. Voices is on literally everything. If you go to YouTube, it's just Voices from the Mausoleum. Twitter, it's Voices FTM. No, from Mausoleum. I'm on TikTok. I don't post as much there. I'm not hip with the TikTok, but I'm also on Instagram as Voices from the Mausoleum. So anywhere you go and you type in Voices from the Mausoleum, you'll probably find us.
Awesome. I totally pronounced mausoleum incorrectly. Awesome. Great. I speak
Did
English.
you?
Yeah, I sent it some other way.
I didn't
Well.
even notice it. A lot of people say voices of the mausoleum, so you got the from part. That's important.
Yay. Well, thank you so much again.
Yeah, thanks again. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There? I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Angel, and thanks again to Angel for coming on. I'll leave links to all of her socials and where you can watch Voices from the Mausoleum on YouTube. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC. Don't forget to check out our Patreon in the show notes, and if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at who's there PC at gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.